Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, November 13th, 2024. We have five cases on our calendar this morning. This is a third of our three oral arguments. This is A24-0597 in the matter of the determination of need for an environmental impact statement for the Mile Post 7 West Ridge Railroad Relocation, Dam Extensions, and Stream Mitigation Project, Lake County, Minnesota. I understand that we have quite a few people who are interested in hearing the oral arguments today. I believe that that other people have been directed to the overflow room, so they will still be able to hear the oral arguments. Also, this is being live streamed and it is being recorded, so the proceedings today are going to be available to anybody who wishes to listen to them after. That should be available within the next couple days. Counsel for appellant, when we begin, you will have 15 minutes for your initial oral arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent. And I believe that respondents, plural, will be splitting time. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It'll be 8 minutes for the DNR and 7 minutes for initial.
Okay, thank you. We will make sure that the clock reflects that as well. And then after arguments by respondent, then appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. The podium can be raised and lowered. There's a button underneath that you can raise and lower it to make sure that you speak clearly into the microphone. There's also a clock on the podium to let you know how much time you have, and please try to stay within the time. That is, of course, subject to any questions that we may have. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Paula Maccabee, and I represent Appellant Water Legacy, a water protection group formed by Northern Minnesota residents. This case is about whether North Shore Mining will be allowed to increase the height, footprint, and storage volume of Milepost 7 tailings basin without an environmental impact statement, or EIS. The Milepost 7 tailings basin is located immediately above the towns of Beaver Bay and Silver Bay, and less than 3 miles from Lake Superior. The basin holds polluted mine tailings waste and wastewater and dams built of coarse sand and gravel. If these dams fail, polluted tailings sludge and wastewater will flood down on homes, lands, and Lake Superior.
Ms. Maccabee, the biggest issue you have, of course, is that in 1975-76, an EIS was prepared. And this is a very voluminous record, but I looked through the record, and specifically, other than the railroad or the extension of the dam, I don't see that these, my word, modifications, I know you use other words, were not contemplated under the plan of 1975-76. So what is the biggest, what is the best argument you have that we should construe this as a project differing in scope and extent from the prior project?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think it's very important that this project is very different from what was contemplated in 1975. First of all, in 1975, both the state EIS and the Army Corps EIS said it was necessary to build a downstream dam. And those are depicted on page 12 of Water Legacy's principal brief. And the key point about that is a downstream dam is built like a pyramid, and all the dam raises are built on solid ground. And what the Army Corps and DNR both said at the time is that an upstream dam would not be safe because it would place up ongoing raises on what the Army Corps called slimes or fine tailings.
That's what they said back then.
Yes.
So it's the same argument now today that was raised back then. And I totally understand where you're going at with this, but I'm trying to get it beyond what has happened then. And perhaps cumulative effect is your best argument.
Well, two things. Let's take it more systematically. Good point. First of all, this is a project. It will require government approvals. DNR is planning both to amend the permit to mine and to update the master permit. No doubt it is a project. Now, what the rules say in 4410, 3000, subpart 7, is that if there's an addition or an expansion of an existing project, and they call it an implemented project, not what was approved a long time ago, then you have to look at the rules in 4410, 1700 to decide if an EIS is necessary. So the new project, Your Honor, you're right. On its face, the new project is extending dams by 1.7 miles, building a brand new railroad, which is outside the ultimate limit. It's increasing the tailings basin footage by 650 acres. That was already.
And I will give you that, the railroad and the extension of the dams. But I also saw that those were considered in the EAW. Are you saying that they were not adequately addressed in the EAW? Maybe that's my words putting it out there.
I'm saying something slightly different. I'm saying the only reason why this project is needed is because the DNR made a decision in 1997 to allow upstream dams because there wasn't enough coarse building material, and made another decision in 2003 to allow offset upstream dams, again, to minimize dam construction material. So what DNR is putting together here and what North Shore is asking for are upstream dams. And the reason why this project is needed to move the railroad beyond the ultimate railroad alignment in the EIS is in order to support a different kind of dam. So the project as a whole is, including the government approval and these infrastructure, is all, and the Army of Corps said it, it's intended to expand the tailings basin. The record of decision said it's intended to allow the increased elevation and deposition of tailings.
Growing incrementally is what's happening.
So there are two things. There's a connected action.
Right.
And the connected action is between these infrastructure improvements and the real elephant. The real elephant in the room, we're not looking just at the ears or the tail, is the expansion. Is the expansion to 1,315 feet above sea level, an expansion of 650 acres of tailings basin, and an expansion of wet slurry fine tailings storage to 753 million tons.
Isn't that still below the 1977 limits?
The 1977 limits considered the idea that there would be much more coarse tailings. They put the limit on fine tailings as 478 million tons. And since then, what's happened, and this is why, you know, if you look at the DNR's record of decision, they keep saying we changed it in 1907 and we changed it again because there wasn't as much coarse tailings material. So think of like you go to Panera and you buy a bread bowl soup. Basically, as compared to what was looked at in 1975, there's a lot less bread and a lot more soup, and that makes it more dangerous. And so we got the project, its connected actions, and then you're right, Your Honor. You talked about cumulative impacts. And cumulative potential effects means both what happened in the past, the decision to use upstream and offstream dams, and also what is planned. And what's planned is to fill this all the way up. And all the expert evidence, and that includes the Barr report, as well as Dr. Emmerman's opinions, is that as you build this thing taller,
the dam failings.
The dam.
And the concern I have is raised in both respondents' briefs is that that's speculative. How do we get beyond concluding that, determining that as a review court?
Your Honor, that's a really good question. This case is very different from 1977. And it's different not only because the DNR said in 1977 that if designed properly, the dams can't fail. And the court also highlighted that there was no expert evidence on the other side. And now we know, because the DNR said it would be hubris to say otherwise, that dams can fail. And the peer-reviewed literature, which no one has disputed, is that over a period of 100%, there's 100 years, there's about a 50% risk of failure. And over the long term, that probability approaches 100%. And the reason why this is important is downstream dams, the consequences of failure are not only less likely, but much less severe.
So would we be reweighing the evidence, though, if we concluded or took that evidence into bearing as far as the potentiality of a dam failure? Are we reweighing what's been considered?
Your Honor, There's no need to reweigh the evidence. No one's proposing to dig out the old tailings that are already on Milepost 7. All what we are asking this court to do is say, there's a project before us right now in 2024. Which direction are we going to go? Are we going to follow the rules of the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act and protect both human life and environment by conducting an EIS that will examine these things based on current science, which is very different than it was 48 years ago, and based on a very different dam construction and dam ratio of fine to coarse tailings, all of which are factors that increase the risk of dam failure.
Counsel, I have several questions for you.
Yes, sir.
You talked about how this is an expansion because originally the request was 478 million tons of fine tailings, but I don't think you finished the thought. What is the request now with respect to the fine tailings in terms of the amount?
What the DNR in its environmental need decision in 2021 said is that this dam is being built to contain 753 million tons of fine tailings. What the North Shore most recent five-year operating plan says is that 68% of the tailings will be fine tailings, as opposed to when this project was started, 58. So
that's an important point. 753 million is the capacity?
Yeah, 753 million, according to the DNR document, is fine tailings. It is not stated it is the full capacity. And the reason why that is, I will tell you, Your Honor, this record has a lot of inconsistencies. DNR says in one point that the most recent investigation of the dam had 119 million tons of tailings. And in another place, it says 191 million. So there are some ambiguities in the record, and I think that is difficult. But there is, this current record contemplates more fine tailings storage with less coarse tailings, and that makes this dam less secure. And also in terms of cumulative potential effects, there have been changes. There was no study at all in 1975 of the impacts of climate change. And now it's uncontroverted that there are extreme weather events as a result of climate change. And the Bar Engineering 2009 report talked about how extreme weather could result in liquefying of the tailings, but also said that that issue wasn't discussed in that report because that report was not looking at transient events. And so there are issues that have not been studied.
So besides the likelihood of climate change, that you talked about the current scientific changes, and that's what I'm getting at as far as accumulative effects. What are some other scientific changes that you can point us to or remind us of as far as our review?
Your Honor, in the 1975 report leading up to the EIS, the expert talked about how geotechnology was a new science, and that new information would need to be studied later about the effects of the clay on resulting in toe uplift, or what they call toe heave, which destabilizes the entire dam. Now, geotechnology is not a new science. And as a matter of fact, the Bar 2009 report said that the dams are all three of them, 1, 2, and 5, they're all unstable from the perspective of toe heave. And dam 1, which is the biggest dam, would be unstable against undrained slope failure if it reached the project height. So there's not only general information in the record that wasn't available in 1975 about the general risks of upstream and offstream dams, there's also specific information about the risks of these Milepost 7 dams that weren't available. One other thing, in 1975, there was no modeling of how much of the tailing sludge themselves would be mobilized and would flood down on homes in Beaver Bay or Silver Bay or into Lake Superior. And now there is very clear modeling, and the industry is saying that upstream dams are not safe, partially because of the catastrophic effects that have happened in other areas where hundreds of people have lost their lives.
Counsel, I have a couple more follow-up questions. One is, you talked about originally the 68% of fine tailings, and what is the difference between the original project and the proposed one?
The original project in the Army Corps 1977 EIS said it was 58%. The most recent five-year operating plan said that 68% would be the loose fine tailings. And whether or not that's significant, apparently it was significant enough for the DNR to change the whole dam from a downstream dam design to an upstream and then to an offset upstream. So that is the indication that it's significant, because the whole design that was rejected in the EIS was adopted.
Okay, a couple more questions. Yes, I know we're running out of time. One, you talked earlier about whether it's an expansion of an implemented project, but respondents argue that you look at what the original project design was, not necessarily what was implemented. What is your support for the argument that we need to look at the project, the original project, as it was implemented?
Two things. The word implemented is in the rules 4410-3000 in subpart 7. And then if you look at the word expansion also talks about the existing project and an extension of capacity. Now, DNR has said that an extension either means more capacity or extending over additional time. And DNR has said that this project, the infrastructure project, would allow 40 more years of tailings. And if you just use the actual rate of deposition, it would actually allow 90 more years of tailings.
Okay, last question. You talk about how this current request is for an upstream dam, correct, for 1, 2, and 5?
Your Honor, I use the term offset upstream because that's how DNR characterizes it.
Offset upstream.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
And do I understand your argument to be that that is different than what was originally proposed and what was originally implemented of a downstream?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so has that change from downstream to upstream dams, has that taken place?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The first change was made in 1997, and the only reason we know about it is because Water Legacy got a Freedom of Information Act document from the Army Corps that revealed that. And DNR allowed the change to upstream dams in 1997. And then North Shore came back and said, we don't have enough coarse tailings, and DNR allowed in 2003 offset upstream dams. And the characteristic of offset upstream dam is exactly what the EIS said we didn't want for Milepost 7, which is that new dam raises are placed on top of the loose, soft, fine tailings rather than on the solid ground.
Thank you, Council. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And counsel for DNR, you will have 8 minutes for your arguments. The clock is set. Please state your name for the record and party you are representing. You may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Oliver Larson. I'm with the Attorney General's Office, and I represent the Department of Natural Resources. I really want to start by just talking about, you know, what is the purpose of environmental review. It's to inform the decision makers about what the potential adverse impacts might be of the decision that they are about to make. Two points coming out of this. I'm not sure that there is a site in the state that has been more studied than this site. There were literally hundreds of days of evidence that were collected in the 1970s leading up to that EIS. And over the last 40 years, there's been extensive study of this site since then. Every 5 years, a new operation plan is submitted. These operation plans run into the hundreds of pages. Those operation plans describe the types of dams that have been constructed, the safety factors that are present. We have lots of information about what the safety factors are here.
Council, let me interrupt for a minute. In wading through the hundreds of pages of the addendum, there's a comment from the Sierra Club that goes to the master permit that suggests that it was supposed to be renewed for five-year intervals. You know the comment I'm referring to? This is on addendum 130. And wasn't renewed every 5 years. They said the last permit to mine for the Milepost 7 basin was issued in 1985, expired long ago. And they go on to make other accusations about there never having been a dam safety permit required by Minnesota statutes ever issued.
Let me take a step back and address this at a higher level. There is an unusual permitting regime for this mine because it was permitted before the creation of the statutes that created essentially the dam permitting scheme that we now have, and frankly, the essentially the reclamation parts of the permit to mine. And so what the DNR did was the DNR issued a master permit, and that's what it termed it, in 1977 or thereabouts, that predates the creation of these two statutory schemes. And then what the DNR does then, so that permit has within it lots of things that if the mine was a later permitted mine would be in a permit to mine, and some things that would be in a dam safety permit. It's sort of this unique combo permit that is being renewed every 5 years through these operation permits. Right, sorry, through these operation plans. Essentially, that's what DNR is looking at. They're saying, how are you know, what's going to happen over the next 5 years with respect to the construction of this tailings basin? And that's the process that DNR is doing. And there have been some updates to some of the actual permit to mine deal with reclamation issues. Essentially, as there have been adjustments made to this tailing basins that brought new areas into the permit to mine area that requires some reclamation work. So there have been permit to mine around there. So I think these are writ large. I think these are technical arguments that don't get to the substance, that there absolutely is a permitting scheme in place that meets the requirements of state law. It's just not called a permit to mine or dam safety permit. It's called a master permit.
So you're telling us the DNR has always complied with the statutory framework as it applies to this project?
Yes.
I have a question of, would you agree that this is would be considered a project as defined by the statute?
I want to be a little careful because I'm not exactly sure what you're driving at. I'm not denying that essentially what's being proposed here triggers the need to go through the environmental review process. The question for this case is, where does it stop, right? So definitely because of the, in particular, the mandatory EAW for the stream work, this then DNR ultimately determined that it is connected to these other two pieces of the project, that yes, it's a project for purpose of going through EAW at
okay.
least.
Okay, yeah, I just raised that issue because appellant's counsel is arguing that. And where I'm going with that really is, if it's a project, and I think the parties do agree on that point, is whether or not this is an expansion or an addition to the prior project, or if it's connected to. And so where I'm going is I'm trying to understand the DNR's position, because I didn't see any argument in the brief in terms of whether or not it's an expansion. And what's the DNR's interpretation of an expansion of a project?
The project here is, at its terminal phase, is the same project that was approved and permitted in 1977. So, and whether you look through the, and I would just refer you to the record of decision or the EAW itself in terms of it talking about the fact that the amount of tailings that are going to be held, where they're going to be held, the ultimate height of the dams, all these factors are the same.
But are they the same? It seems like the project here, one, it's different because it's upstream versus downstream. The original project was downstream, correct?
It's originally proposed, yes.
And dams. Originally implemented?
Yeah, to my understanding, yes.
Okay, so the original project was a downstream. This is now upstream. The tailings, the fine tailings, seem to be different. And so you've got a different architecture with a dam. And then you also have, rather than a solid base, which was there for the original project, now you've got fine tailings on the bottom, which appellants argue creates a much more unstable base and could lead to potential impact. So why isn't this new project different from, and more particularly, an expansion of the original project?
So for purpose of environmental review, the risks that are presented are no different.
Well, aren't the risks different? Because you've got a different architecture now. You've got a different structure. You've got a different base.
Let me refine what I'm trying to say here. It is acknowledged that these upstream dam construction methods require maintenance, and that's what makes them different than the downstream dams. No dispute about that. What I'm saying is, if there's a dam failure, what's going to happen to the environment is going to be the exact same thing that would have happened in 1977. And environmental review is there to tell us, like, what is going to be the environmental impacts if something bad happens, or just where the environmental impacts going to be of this thing if it's just completed exactly as it should be.
But that seems to be a different inquiry in terms of what the result will be. I don't think there's any dispute that the result from a dam break is going to be catastrophic, whether it's from an upstream dam or a downstream dam. I think the issue is how it's being implemented and what is being implemented. And that's where I'm right. struggling with.
So let me take you back, I think, to the fundamental purpose here is to look at environmental risk, not the engineering issues, right? The engineering issues are there to be arbitrated in permitting, right? This is not, if people are saying that fundamentally what DNR is ultimately going to permit here when it approves the plan for the final construction is arbitrary and capricious or unsafe, they will have the opportunity to challenge that decision and say, your engineering is unsafe. The question in environmental review is, have we developed a good enough record to understand not engineering risks, but have we developed enough information to understand the environmental risks that are presented by the project? And there's not really any two things here. There's no real argument or meaningful argument that we don't understand what the environmental risks are going to be if this project fails. Supreme Court said in 1977 they're going to be catastrophic. We agree with that. The other thing is nobody's really been able to point out, like, the dispute here, the relator here already believes there's enough information that this project shouldn't move forward, right?
Counsel, let me interrupt for a minute. You acknowledge that it'd be catastrophic, but the project's changing. I mean, it's increasing in size. As I understand it, the dam's length will be increased. So all of these things would suggest that a catastrophe could be more likely than it was in 1977. And almost a half a century has gone by. So you can see the concern that might lead to the request for an EIS.
I'll make two brief responses in the amount of time. One isn't EIS going to answer those questions? I don't think it is, because that's really for permitting. That's one argument. And the second thing I would point out is, again, the information about how to arbitrate those risks is already in the record, right? I mean, DNR disagrees with Water Legacy about how safe these dams are or are not, but there's no shortage of information, right? They've already said they have enough information to demonstrate that this is unsafe. If they do, environmental review is not the place to continue to explore the engineering challenges. That's for permitting.
Thank you, Council. Council for North Shore Mining Company, you will have 7 minutes for your oral arguments. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may proceed.
May it please the court, Alexander Arnsberg on behalf of North Shore Mining Company. Relators in this case have taken what is a routine application for a permit amendment to modify infrastructure within the footprint of an existing and previously permitted mining facility, and are improperly attempting to use it as an excuse to challenge the very existence of that previously permitted facility. The purpose
I'm not sure if they're challenging the very existence. I think they're challenging what the project, and to use your terms, to modify the infrastructure, correct? And why isn't that modification of infrastructure? Why isn't that an expansion or an addition?
So I think it's important to focus on what is the project here. So before the court is not the sufficiency of the 1976 EIS. Before the court is the question of whether this project and the EAW, the environmental assessment worksheet that was prepared for this project, requires the preparation of an environmental impact statement, and whether DNR's determination that the project, which again is limited in scope to certain modifications, it's the movement of a railway, it's the extension of certain existing dams, does that project have the potential for significant environmental effects? And a key word there is potential. So the DNR is not required to consider things that are not reasonably expected to occur.
You agree the extension of Dam 1 and the coal ash pit was not contemplated in the EIS back in 75-76?
I think contemplated is a key word there. The master permit is a permit that creates a framework, just like a master agreement creates a framework. The master permit sets forth what is the maximum size of this tailings basin, what is the height that we're going to allow it to be built to, what is the scope, how many tailings do we expect it to hold. And the master permit did not, importantly, try to specify every single piece of infrastructure or operational detail within that footprint.
Was it in the EAW? In the EAW?
The EAW that was just prepared?
Right. What year are we? 2023. Thank you.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So the master permit envisioned a system where there would be requests for additional approval to make modifications.
But you're talking, But aren't we supposed to look at the project as it was implemented versus what it contemplated? It could be the upper levels of tailings and dam height, et cetera, et cetera.
So the master permit envisioned a certain size of the tailings basin that being constructed. It left certain details out of the master permit, allowing flexibility, and the operators have sought permit amendments to specify different details within the footprint. So North Shore here is moving around pieces within an existing footprint that had already been approved in the master permit.
That's not an answer to my question. My question is whether or not we need to look at the project as implemented per the rules versus what it contemplated.
Sure. And so in determining whether or not an EIS is required, so in determining whether there's a potential for significant environmental effects, the statute provides four factors. And one of the factors, and I think it's one that you might be getting to, is cumulative or potential cumulative effects. And under that factor, it's appropriate to consider the tailings basin as it has been constructed as a sort of baseline condition. And DNR did exactly that. It acknowledged the impacts that have happened. It acknowledged in the record of decision the incremental expansion that would happen or would be facilitated by this project, this additional 650 acres that would be developed, and consider that appropriately in the record of decision. And the other factors include regulatory oversight, which I'm sure we'll discuss, and also the fourth one is the extent to which a prior environmental study has already spoken to the issue and allows DNR to understand what the impacts are from the project. And so to the extent the 1976 EIS is relevant, it is most relevant to that fourth factor. It is information on the record, in addition to the 40 years of information on the record that has been developed since then, that informs DNR's decision.
Even though it's a half a century old.
Certainly, it's in the record.
Yeah, the distinction between potential versus reasonably expected to occur is an interesting one, because it seems to me that DNR suggested dam failure is remote and speculative, and I suppose that's just potential as opposed to reasonably expected to occur. So logically, then, do you need to wait until the dam is about to fail before you could say it's reasonably expected to occur?
No. Well, first, I think the Minnesota Supreme Court in the proceedings of the mid-70s spoke to whether or not a dam failure was reasonably expected to occur. It concluded this is a remote speculative event, not the sort of thing that DNR needs to consider as a potential for significant environmental impacts. But it's important that we don't wait for a dam failure to occur to mitigate the effect. We put in place mechanism for mitigation right now. You mitigate dam failure effects by mitigating the chance that a dam failure is going to happen in the first place.
I agree with you that the Minnesota Supreme Court has already looked at the issue of whether or not of the risk, and said that the risk of the dam as proposed in the mid-70s, the risk was relatively low there.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to be a different type of dam than what is being proposed with this project in terms of upstream versus downstream, and a tailings base that, or a dam that is based on fine tailings, which appellants argue is less stable than the original dam that is proposed.
Sure. So the master permit does not prescribe a certain makeup of coarse or fine tailings. There was a projection in the environmental review documents, but the environmental review documents are not the permitting documents. The master permit leaves out the detail, and so that the operator can request, or does request through the five-year operating plans, which provide information on exactly how the dam is going to be built for the next 5 years, for DNR's review, an independent assessment. And there's information provided on stability, on monitoring, such that DNR can make an independent assessment of what the risks are. And in approving those five-year operating plans, which again is not the decision that is before the court right now, DNR is making the determination that the dams are safe. And DNR is our chief regulator of tailings dams and dam safety. And as you know, it is not the court's role to second guess DNR's factual determinations when they are supported by substantial evidence, which we think there's more than substantial evidence here. Thank you.
Well, you're correct on that, but we also have a standard review of looking at what the statute and the rules say, and that we review de novo, and we give no deference to the agency on those interpretations of what those rules and the statute mean, correct?
May I respond to that?
Please.
So there is there's case law precedent. We cite it in our brief that DNR's the determination of whether there's a potential for significant environmental effects is a primarily factual determination. It is DNR's application of the facts to that standard. And so that is a factual determination that we believe is entitled to deference.
That wasn't my question, though. My question is, we have de novo review over what the rules and the statute mean, correct?
Of course.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There we go. Thank you, Your Honor. First, I think it's important that this court realizes that as compared either to the implemented project or to the 1975 EIS project, this dam proposal is more likely to result in potential significant adverse effects from dam failure, and those results are likely to be more serious. And that is the consensus of all the expert evidence in this file, including even the Barr 2009 expert report, where he talks about if the dams are getting taller, it is more vulnerable. And there's actually a section where Barr Engineering talks about the risk of even mild earthquakes is exacerbated by the offset upstream dam because the tailings are more likely to liquefy. And as compared to the dam with the pyramid on page 12, the upstream dam is on page 13 of our principal brief. What Dr. Edmerman testified is that if it's a downstream dam, even if the tailings liquefy, they don't necessarily get loose and become a mudslide. And in the United States—
And just to clarify, when you're talking, I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you're talking about the liquefaction of the tailings, you're relying on the issue that we're talking about the fine tailings.
That's correct.
Those are going to be more likely to liquefy versus the coarse tailings.
And that can happen in an extreme weather event. It can happen as if there's total uplift and there's erosion backwards. And it can happen with a very mild earthquake, or it can happen without any known trigger. And in this record, it is really important to notice that in the history of the United States, there has never been a downstream dam, 0% of very serious dam failure. There have been instances of upstream dams with that very serious dam failure. And in terms of regulation, there is no dam safety permit. A dam safety permit would have required an first of all, it would have required hearings, but it would have required and a notice to the public, but it would have required a finding that the dams are constructed based on current prudent factors that will be protective of the environment in the long term. Currently, and Dr. Emmerman details it in his two reports, upstream dam construction is no longer considered a current prudent engineering method, and many industry sources are recommending against it. Finally, I want one more thing, and then is that an EIS is to consider engineering issues. That's among the alternatives in 4410-2300G is alternative technologies and construction materials. And an EIS is supposed to consider safety. If you look at MEPA 116D I think it's 01 and 02, the purpose is not only to protect the environment, but to protect human safety and welfare. So having this analysis is precisely what MEPA is intended to do. And Water Legacy does not pretend to know all the answers. All we have is enough expert evidence and agreement by DNR that there's a potential for significant effects. We don't know the scope of those effects. We don't know how many new homes will be affected. We don't know what changes ought to be made to make those dangers less likely and less severe. And that is exactly why we're asking for an EIS, because there's no independent DNR expert report in this record. And our experts got us to the point of saying there's a potential for significant environmental effects resulting from this new project. Solving that, we need the EIS.
Counsel, you may have addressed this already, but I just want to be clear. Response have argued that this is really an issue of permitting rather than an issue of a need for an EIS. Can you address that issue, please? Why isn't this just a permitting issue?
Your Honor, what MEPA says is an EIS should precede the permitting because it will inform the permitting. And if Sierra Club, Water Legacy, MCA were to walk into a room and say, is this permit any good? Without an EIS, there's no analysis of what are the significant environmental effects and what could or should be done to avoid them, minimize them, or mitigate them.
And where specifically in MEPA does it say that?
Well, if you look at 116D04 subdivision 2A, it talks about how the approval decision needs to be preceded by the EIS. That's the whole purpose, is so that when a decision is made about a project which has the potential for harm, the government and the public would know what the information is and would know what the choices are, so they could decide whether there is a feasible and prudent alternative that would reduce, avoid, and or prevent those harms.
Thank you, Council. I see there are no more questions. Thank you to all Council for your oral arguments and your briefing. Obviously, it was very extensive, and this is a very extensive record in history that we have here, and we realize that it's very important for all the parties. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. And thank you to all the people who came to participate and listen to the oral arguments as well. We appreciate that. That is our final oral argument. So court is now in recess to consider the rest of our calendar. Thank you all.
All rise. Thank you.